I wonder whether you're a bit of a fence sitter. That is someone who doesn't come down on one side or the other in arguments. Often that can be a good thing, can't it? Our society often wants to polarise us into one or two camps. It can be good to actually weigh up the both sides of the argument and think things through. But there are some times where you have to cast a vote. You have to come down on one side or the other. A few years ago, the big political issue was Brexit, wasn't it? And everyone wanted you to come down on one side or the other. Are you pro-Brexit or you're anti-Brexit? And there was a lot of mudslinging on each side, wasn't there? Not really engaging with the arguments, but attacking one another. And it was good to sit back and think and listen to the issues before you made your decision. But I remember when I was walking down to the ballot box, I'd thought these things through, I'd heard the things on both sides. And even as I was walking down, I realised I hadn't quite made my mind up which way I was going to vote. And there I was in the ballot box and I had to tick yes or no or whatever it was, agree, disagree. There was no third option in the middle. There wasn't, can I have a bit more time to think about it? It was either yes or no. I'm not going to tell you which way I voted. Trusting in Jesus is a bit like that, isn't it? Lots of people waver in the middle. Am I a Christian? Well, I go to church, find lots of the teaching helpful, but I'm not sure I'd go the whole way to describe myself as a Christian. And certainly there's a good thing about spending a bit of time understanding what the issues are, not being forced straight away without thinking about it to decide whether you believe in Jesus or not, just like it was important to think through that vote. But there does come a time to put your mark in the ballot box. Is Jesus your God or is he not? How do you possibly make that decision? Well, this group of people, these sort of fence sitters, are the ones Jesus is speaking to today. And Jesus raises two questions that force them to pick a side. Now, in the case of these individuals, they end up actually going against Jesus. They start the passage believing in him. By the end of it, they're throwing stones at him. So it went really well. But if you examine these questions, it could be that you realise, no, I don't believe this, like these people do. But it could be you realise, actually, I do believe in Jesus. And I do want to live my life for him. The two questions Jesus asks in this passage are very simple. He wants you to ask, who am I? And who is Jesus? Simple as that. Who am I? And who am Jesus? If you answer those questions, you won't be sat on the fence. You'll have decided yes or no to Jesus. So let's dive in. Verses 31 to 47 answer that first question. Who am I? Jesus tells his audience who they are, and they aren't happy about it. And the same applies to us. If you really understand what Jesus says in verses 31 to verse 47, you're not going to be happy about it instantly. But it's vital to come to terms with. There are three things we learn about our identity in verses 31 to 47. Who am I? Well, you're a slave to sin. You're not Abraham's descendant. And you're not God's child. That's what Jesus has to say. First, you are a slave to sin. We see that in verses 31 to 36. We're at the Jewish festival of tabernacles. Jesus has just told them that he's the light of the world, the one everyone's been waiting for. And we're told at the end of verse 30, even as he spoke, many believed in him. Last time he spoke to the crowds and he spoke to the religious leaders. Now he's gathered those who've responded to that message. And he says in verse 31 to 32, the big message which they're going to be debating for the rest of this passage. He says this, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth and the truth will set you free. Jesus is saying, who are the real disciples? Not just those who believe in me for a moment. Who are the real ones who follow me? Well, they're the ones who hold to my teaching. Now, different translations of the Bible was originally written in Greek, so there's different translations. Some will say hold, some will say remain in. The idea is that this teaching isn't just a momentary thing, it's something you keep holding on to. That's a good message to you if you're new to the Christian faith. Perhaps you wonder to yourself, am I really a disciple? Well, if you hold on with Jesus' teaching, if you keep going in it, then that is proof that really something has changed in you. If you keep in Jesus' truth, well, that truth will set you free. Now, these people don't listen to Jesus' main point. They don't say, wow, how wonderful. If we keep holding on with you, we'll be set free. It'll be wonderful. We'll know the truth. Now, they take umbrage at this phrase, set you free. We think that sounds great. Liberation, fantastic. For them, it's incredibly offensive. Verse 33, they answered him, we are Abraham's descendants and have never been slaves of anyone. How can you say that we shall be set free? Now, I don't know what Bible they're reading. It seems to me that there's a lot of times where Abraham's descendants, the people of Israel, are in slavery, particularly when they go into Egypt in the Exodus. But nonetheless, they're very firmly decided that they are not slaves. There's lots of people in society who are, but they aren't. How dare Jesus say they are slaves? They raise up two issues there. Are they really Abraham's descendants and are they really slaves? And Jesus starts with the first one. Verses 34 to 6, he says, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now a slave has no permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the son sets you free, you will be free indeed. Jesus says, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. What is sin? Well, sin is when we break God's law, when we reject his truth. And Jesus says, if you sin, you are a slave to sin. It doesn't matter if you're Jewish. It doesn't matter if you're Christian. It doesn't matter if you're from a secular home or from another religion. If you break God's law, if you're a sinner, you're a slave to sin. It's not just a one-time thing. It's something that you can't help yourself from doing. And he says to them, I'm the son though. A son has a permanent place in the family. You can't be set free from your slavery to sin by another slave to sin. It's not going to work. You need someone like me, a son, who is able to release you from your slavery. It's a good message. It's a positive message. But it's only a positive message if you accept that you're a slave to sin. If you accept you're a slave to sin, Jesus says, well, I can set you free. Come to me. You've got to accept you're a slave to sin first. So who are you? You're a slave to sin, Jesus says. Now, the other thing they claimed was that they were Abraham's descendants. And that's Jesus' second point. You are not Abraham's children. Now, there's an interesting difference in language here. In verse 37, he says to them, I know you are Abraham's descendants. He seems to say you are Abraham's descendants. But then in verse 39, he says, if you were Abraham's children, then you would do what Abraham did. Which seems to imply that they aren't true children. Now, there is a key difference in the words there. You might not have spotted it. In the first one, he said descendants, and in the second one, he said children. And they're two different words in the original as well. So descendants is the Greek word spermos, where we get our word sperm from. And it means that they are genetically descended from Abraham. They are part of Abraham's family line. They have Abraham's genetic material in them. But are they true children? Are they true sons bearing the family likeness? Let's see what Jesus says. Verse 37. I know you are Abraham's descendants, yet you are looking for a way to kill me because you have no room for my word. I'm telling you what I've seen in the Father's presence. And you're doing what you've heard from your father. Jesus says, I know you're physically descended from Abraham. I know if you went to DNA.com, they'd have Abraham in your 100% or whatever. But you're trying to kill me because you don't have room for my message. And the reason you don't have room for my message is your true father isn't Abraham. As he'll point out later on, your true father is the devil. You are not following Abraham's example. Therefore, you aren't true children. Now, verse 39 to 41 feels like it goes over the same material again. If you've ever been in a theological argument with someone, you'll know that happens all the time. This is how we know it's true. Because people do go round and round in circles. And that's what happens here. Verse 39. Abraham is our father. They answered. If you were Abraham's children, said Jesus, then you would do what Abraham did. As it is, you're looking for a way to kill me, a man who's told you the truth that I heard from God. Abraham did not do such things. You are doing the works of your own father. Sometimes when people have been adopted, they get asked, who's your real mum and dad? And what they would generally say is, my real mum and dad are the ones who raised me throughout my life. Yes, there's the ones who I'm genetically descended from, my birth mum and my birth dad, but they're not my true mother and father. They had nothing to do with me. My real mum and dad are my adopted parents because they're the ones who shaped my life. And it's similar to what Jesus is saying here. You may be physically descended from Abraham, but it's as if you were sold off and adopted into a different family, and that the devil was the one who raised you, because you don't do what your father Abraham would do. In those days, sons always did what their dads did. If your dad was an ironmonger, you were an ironmonger. If your dad was a farmer, you were a farmer. Well, they're not true sons of Abraham because they don't do what Abraham does. Now, perhaps there might be someone from Jewish descent here this morning, physically descended from Abraham. Jesus would say it's not enough to be genetically connected to Abraham. You've got to follow Abraham's example. Probably more likely, we have people amongst us who are children of Christians. And the argument runs the same. Of course I'm a Christian. My mum and dad are Christian. My grandparents are Christian. I believed in God forever and a day. Jesus would say, you're only true children of your parents if you do as they did and listen to my words. So who am I? Well, according to these verses, you are a slave to sin. You're not Abraham's children. And now onto a third thing. You are not God's child. The people doubled down. We are not illegitimate children, they protested. The only father we have is God himself. Now, that might be a little dig at Jesus because nobody knows who his dad is. But they're claiming we're not illegitimate. We've descended from Abraham. And that means not only are we descended from Abraham, we're God's children. And again, Jesus' logic is the same. If you claim to be of God, you do what God wanted you to do. Verse 42. Jesus said to them, if God were your father, you would love me, for I've come here from God. I've not come on my own. God sent me. You're not children of God any more than you're children of Abraham. You'd love me if you were from God, because God loves me. Jesus goes on to identify whose child they are a child of. Verse 43, why is my language not clear to you? Because you're unable to hear what I say. Not you're refusing to hear, you're unable to hear. It's like the words are coming into their ears and they're being snatched away. Their slave master, the devil, won't allow them to hear it. Verse 44, you belong to your father, the devil, and you want to carry out your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning, not holding to the truth, for there is no truth in him. When he lies, he speaks his native language, for he is a liar and the father of lies. He says, you're not like God, you're much more like Satan. He was a murderer from the beginning, and you are trying to murder me. He was a liar from the beginning, and you don't listen to me telling the truth. He finishes off, yet because I tell the truth, you don't believe in me. Can any of you prove me guilty of sin? If I'm telling the truth, why don't you believe me? Whoever belongs to God, hear what God says. The reason you do not hear is that you do not belong to God. It's not because I'm a liar that you don't listen to me, Jesus says. It's because I tell the truth. Those who don't belong to God but belong to the devil don't hear what I have to say. He even says, none of you can prove me guilty of any sin. That is an astonishing claim, isn't it? Imagine if I stood up here and said, can any of you convict me of sin? We would not get home for tea with the amount of accusations that would come in. But in this whole crowd of people, not one of them has seen Jesus lose his temper once, break a law once. That is because he's the only true child of God. The rest are descendants of Satan. Now that is a hard truth from Jesus. The Jews of that time struggled to believe it, and many of us do today. Who are you? Jesus says you're a slave of sin. You're not a son of Abraham, and your father is not God. You are a slave to sin. What is sin? Sin is rejecting or ignoring God in the world he created, not being or doing what he requires in his law. Is that true of you? Have you ever sinned, even once? Of course you have. Jesus is the only person who can say he's never sinned. So you are a slave of sin, by that logic. You're not Abraham's children. Again, probably none of us here are genetically descended from Abraham. But all of us want to think we get a free pass. Perhaps because of our parents, perhaps because of the country we were raised in. Now Jesus says you can't just inherit knowing God. You've got to believe for yourself. And you're not even God's children. You don't belong to his family if you don't accept and love Jesus. Now, the Bible does sometimes say that everybody is a child of God, that he's the father of mankind and that he's the creator of all. But just like those who are genetically descended aren't all the true children, so all those created by God aren't all his true child. If we don't love Jesus, then we aren't. Now, that's a hard truth, but Jesus says, whoever belongs to God hears what God says. If God is at work in your heart, you'll recognize the truth of Jesus' statements. And you'll recognize how dangerous a situation it is to be without Jesus. Remember where we started. He said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Even those difficult, hard truths that we want to reject, if we believe them, then we'll be set free. By nature, you are a slave of sin, but if you trust in Jesus, you can be set free from sin. By nature, you're not a child of Abraham, but if you trust in Jesus, you can become a child of Abraham. By nature, you're not a child of God, but you can become a child of God. If you come to Jesus, then he will set you free. If you recognize that you are enslaved, then come to Jesus and he will set you free. Now, Christians, which I'm aware is the majority of us in this room, because you're trusting in Jesus, you are already free. These are all past tense for you. You were slaves to sin. You were not Abraham's children. You were the children of the devil rather than the children of God. But now you've been set free. What does Jesus say to you? He says, hold to my teaching. Keep this in mind. Don't go on from it. Don't think you've grown past needing to recognize your own sinfulness. You were saved because Jesus saved you, not because you deserved it. You were a slave. You needed him to set you free. Only if you recognize the truth of these statements will you keep coming back to Jesus as the true source of everything you need. Who am I? Or more specifically, who am I if Jesus doesn't set me free? I'm a slave to sin. That's the first question Jesus wants you to ask. Now, the second important question we said he wants to answer is, who is Jesus? And we see that answered in verses 48 to 59. Now, the tables turn in the conversation. All of the focus has been on the people. Who are you? And now it turns on to Jesus. And they basically accuse Jesus of exactly the same things he accused them of doing. And in these verses, we learn that Jesus is not a slave to sin. That Jesus is greater than Abraham. And that Jesus is a true son of God. In fact, he is God himself. So verses 48 to 51, Jesus is not a slave to sin. The hearers accuse him of this in verse 48. The Jews answered him, aren't we right in saying that you are a Samaritan and demon-possessed? Now, those are two accusations that fit what Jesus said to them. A Samaritan is not a true descendant of Abraham. They're a kind of half-breed. And the demon-possessed person is someone who is enslaved to sin. So they're saying, you said that we're slaves to sin. No, you're the slave to sin. It's a bit like being on a playground when somebody said, no, you are, because they can't think of a good comeback. That's basically what's happening here. Jesus calmly responds in verse 49, I'm not possessed by a demon. But I honour my Father, and you dishonour me. I'm not seeking glory for myself, but there is one who seeks it, and he is the judge. Very truly I tell you, whoever obeys my word will never see death. What he's saying is, I can't be possessed by a demon. because I honour my Father who is God. Demons don't honour God, and I'm honouring God's. You, however, are dishonouring me by saying this. And that matters because while I'm not seeking to glorify myself, God the Father is seeking to glorify me. And he's going to judge you for those words that you have spoken against me. And yet then, as ever, he doesn't turn away from them and say, "Be gone with you for that insult." He offers them even then salvation. "Very truly I tell you, whoever obeys my word, whoever believes in me, will never see death." Far from being Satan the murderer, Jesus is the one who rescues from death. But they don't take the offer. No, they move on to Jesus' relationship with Abraham in verses 52 to 56. At this they exclaimed, "Now we know that you are demon-possessed. Abraham died, and so did the prophets. Yet you say that whoever obeys your word will never taste death. Are you greater than our father Abraham? He died, and so did the prophets. Who do you think you are?" So before Jesus came, there were Abraham and all of these prophets in the past. And they're saying, "Are you claiming to be greater than them? They couldn't help us escape death. You're saying that you can?" And the honest answer is yes, that is exactly what Jesus is saying. Jesus is greater than Abraham and all the other prophets. He goes on in verses 54 to 55 to basically say that, but in a more humble way. Jesus replied, "If I glorify myself, my glory means nothing. My Father, whom you claim as your God, is the one who glorifies me. Though you do not know him, I know him. If I said I did not, I would be a liar like you, but I do know him and obey his word." So Jesus isn't seeking to glorify himself. He wants the evidence that he is God to come from God the Father. But he can't lie. He can't claim that he doesn't know God or that he doesn't obey God, because he does. So he's going to say, "Yes, I do know God. Yes, I do obey God. And therefore, I am greater than Abraham." As for Abraham, well, verse 56, "Your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day. He saw it and was glad." Like all of those Old Testament fathers in the past, he had a glimpse of what was to come. He didn't know everything about Jesus, but he knew one who was coming, one who would defeat Satan. Didn't know anything about him, but he looked forward to that day coming. So yes, Jesus is greater than Abraham, because Abraham rejoiced in his day coming. Now, this causes even more jeers. They clearly think Jesus is mad at this point. "You're not yet 50 years old," they said to him, "and you have seen Abraham." Now, if you don't know your Bible timeline, Abraham was around 2,000 years before Jesus. So there's no way that he could know him. How could Jesus possibly comment on what Abraham thought as if they were best friends? Well, verse 58. "Very truly, I tell you," Jesus answered. When he says that, he's going to say something really important. "Very truly, I tell you, before Abraham was born, I am." Now, that's a very important statement. And the tenses are really important. He doesn't say, "When Abraham was around, I was around too. I'm just really old. I've been using some good face cream and I look a bit younger than you think." No, he doesn't say that. He doesn't say, "Before Abraham was, I was. I've always existed ever since the creation of the world." That would be a big enough claim. But that's not what he says. He says, "Before Abraham was, I am." Present tense. Now, there's only one person who uses the phrase "I am" on its own in the Old Testament scriptures. And that is God himself. You see, God is outside of time. So in a sense, you can never really talk about the past with God or the future with God. God kind of sits above time and sees the whole thing as one entity. So there was never a time when he was this way or will be that way. He just eternally is. He just can say, "I am." Always the same, never changing, the same yesterday, today, and forever. And so when God appears to Moses and Moses asks him his name, God tells him, "I am who I am." That is what you're to say to the Israelites. "I am has sent me to you." In a sense, every other name of God is just comparing him to something in our world that's not quite as good. We could say God is the king, but he's much greater than a king. We could say that God is love, and that's true, but his love's so much greater than our love. We can't possibly conceive of what his love is. Ultimately, we have to turn to God and say, God is God's. He is. There's nothing that compares with him. So when Jesus says, before Abraham was born, I am, he's claiming to be God. Now, the Jews clearly get that implication, because in verse 59 we read, at this they picked up stones to stone him, but Jesus hid himself, slipping away from the temple grounds. Why are they trying to stone him? Well, because stoning someone to death is the punishment for blasphemy, when someone claims to be God when they are not. Now, of course, Jesus would be blaspheming, unless, of course, he is God, which he is. And if they misunderstood Jesus, Jesus could have said, hold on, guys, well, you misunderstood me here. I'm not claiming to be God's. Or John could have written, now, they thought he was claiming to be God, but let me just clarify for you what is really true. But no, Jesus and John very clearly testify that this is the truth. Jesus has always been and always will be. John lets this be the end of a big section that's run all the way since the start of chapter 7, where people have been debating who Jesus is. It ends by saying, I am. That's who Jesus is. Who is Jesus? Well, he isn't demon-possessed. He's greater than Abraham. He's the true Son of God. Because a son is exactly the same as his father, as we talked about before. He is the great I am. And now we understand what Jesus said when he told them last time. I told you that you would die in your sins if you do not believe that I am he. You will indeed die in your sins. Unless you believe Jesus is the I am, that I am he, you won't be saved. Now, what are the implications of this? Well, first of all, some people say Jesus never claimed to be God. Now, the reason why this misapprehension happens is because of what Jesus says in verse 54. He's not focused on glorifying himself. He wants that to come from the Father. So Jesus glorifies the Father glorifies him. That's why he's not yelling it from the rooftops. We hear in Philippians 2 that he didn't count equality with God a thing to be used to his own advantage. If everyone knew he was God, they'd be putting him in a temple somewhere. So he doesn't say it all the time and expect to be treated like a God all the time. But here he tells them the truth in a situation where it won't cause them to use it to his advantage. They're going to use it to put him to death. And it's very clear what he's claiming. So let's not think we can just take Jesus as a moral teacher. The author C.S. Lewis famously said, Jesus was either mad, bad, or God, but he can't just be good. And that's what the crowd think. Some of them probably think he's mad. He thinks he was born at the same time as Abraham. What a loony. Some think he's bad. He's a demon-possessed man leading people astray from the true faith. Or some, his disciples, will come to believe that he's God. But nobody's thinking he's some nice bloke who people have misunderstood. No, he's made the claim himself. And either you believe it or you don't. So what's the implication for us? Well, we track right back to the start of the passage, because we've been unpacking that statement all the way through in all these arguments. Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Because I am the great I am, because I am God, my teaching, following me, and my truth are what you need to be saved. Now, before we close, let me summarize what this passage means for three types of people. First, there's some of you who just reject the message of Jesus outright. What's this passage say to you? Well, it says if you're trying to understand whether Christianity is true, you've got to examine two things. Firstly, who are you? The Bible says that you aren't as great as you think you are. And neither am I, and neither is anyone in this room. You are a slave to sin. Take an honest look in the mirror. All those things that you would like to be, that you'd like to think of yourself as being, are they actually true? I think if you take a careful look at your life, you'll see that you can't stop doing the things that you know you should stop doing. And isn't it right to say, in light of that, that you're a slave to sin? The other question you've got to ask is, who is Jesus? Probably you're not writing Jesus out completely. You want to say, hey, he's got some good teachings. Oh, maybe weave them into my life here and there. Jesus won't let you stay with that. He says, figure out who I am. I'm claiming to be God. I'm either God or I'm not. You can't sit on the fence anymore. So study that. If he is God, then you owe him your life. If he's a mad or bad man, then you can reject him. What about if you're a Christian? You've been a Christian for a number of years. What does this passage say to you? Well, as he said at the start, hold to my teaching. It's like by being in sin, you're slipped off a cliff. You're about to fall to your death. Jesus threw you a rope, and the only thing you've got to do, the one job, is hold on. Hold on while Jesus does the rest. If you are by nature a slave to sin, then you've got to hold on to Jesus. You might think to yourself one day, hey, maybe it'd be nice to do some sinning for once. But no, you can't trust that. You're by nature a slave to sin. Whatever you think is a good idea is never going to be the good idea. Trust in Jesus. He's the only way you can be saved. If Jesus is God, you're not going to move on from needing him. You're never going to be promoted to being self-reliant and self-confident. You've got to be clinging to him every day of your life. Finally, I think the key audience for this passage is those people in the middle. Those people on the edge of belief who aren't even sure whether they believe themselves. At the start of this passage, we're told that these Jews believed in him. By the end, they're stoning him to death. So whatever belief they had at the start of the passage could only have been on a surface level. And that's the case for some of you. Perhaps your parents brought you to church and you say, yeah, I guess I kind of believe in Jesus. Whilst my options are open, I'll keep coming to church. Or perhaps you, later in your life as an adult, found out about Jesus and you go to church and you do Christian things from time to time, but you're not full on committed to following him. You're not even sure whether you tell people at your workplace that you're a Christian. If that's you, Jesus has two questions to ask you. Who am I? Who do you think you are? Jesus says you're a slave to sin. Now, you can't sit on the fence with that kind of a statement. You either storm off and say, that is not true. I hate Jesus. I'm rejecting him. Or you say, yes, Lord, I am, and please help me. Which are you? If you truly believe what Jesus says, you can't keep him at arm's length. You've got to beg him to save you. Who are you, and then who is Jesus? You might want a Jesus who gives you some moral guidance, a Jesus who gives you a pep talk every time you need it, a Jesus who answers your prayers when you're in a tight spot. And there's all those things in Jesus, but Jesus is saying to you in this passage, I'm not here to be your motivational speaker. I'm not here to be one voice among the many. I'm God. What are you going to do with that? Now, you can either metaphorically stone him and say, I don't want that in my life. Or you can bow the knees and say, yes, you are my God, and I will follow you all my days. But there is no middle ground. Where are you? No fence sitting. No seeing how things work out. Are you willing to accept that you're a slave to sin? Are you willing to accept that Jesus is God? If the answer to those questions is yes, then you have been set free. You are truly saved. If the answer is no, then don't pretend that you're following Jesus. Jesus says, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples, then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free.